a hacker's approach or a computer scientist approach to the legislative process and the tools available. And then when that is talked about, Jonathan and I will talk to you a bit about the practical details of trying to use free software in the parliament. And unfortunately, Erik is not here today, but Christian Engström, MEP for the Pirate Party in Sweden, a member of the Green Group, has kindly accepted to officially open this meeting in his capacity as a member of the parliament. And I will now sit down there.
Well, right. Like Erik said, my name is Christian Engström. I'm a member for the Pirate Party from Sweden in the Green Group, same group as Ingrid, since we're both independents in the Green Group. And, very welcome to the European Parliament, and I'd like to leave the floor to the first speaker, whomever that is.
I'm Moses Stefan. I think I'm the first speaker, according to the agenda. I'm the hacker, he's the scientist. I don't really look like a hacker now. I can't dress like that. My background is I've developed like for more than 15 years free software, and I'm an advocate and dealing with free software and stuff. Free software is basically one of the few technologies that has ethics by design included. I'm not talking about open source software, I'm talking about free software. And by having this ethical aspect in technology, I think if you care about these things, then this automatically leads to copyright, software patents, internet-related issues, privacy. And you start deeply caring about this if you develop and use free software for so long. And of course, there's open standards and open data. And caring deeply about these topics also made me get more deeply involved in trying to defend these topics. So I started to support NGOs, and then I got even deeper, and then I started to also be active here inside the parliament. As supporting some NGOs, and this led me to the realization of some of the opportunities that there are, how we can enhance our efficiency, because arguably NGOs caring about free software and stuff like that are have a resource asymmetry if you compare that to industry lobbying organizations, so we don't have that many resources. Maybe we have a lot of more brain power from all the people on the internet that care about these topics, but financially I think we are much underfunded. So we need to use our brain power to overcome this asymmetry that we're facing in defending our values. And so this is, I think, an old scheme. If you consider David versus Goliath, one has the big resource, power, and the other one has the bits. And this is exactly the same. We are trying to use our bits to overcome this asymmetry. And we're doing some work at supporting NGOs and some other organizations. I came to realizations there are some opportunities that we can use and enhance our efficiency. And that leads, in the first place, about 2 years ago, I was talking with Erik about this topic, and we were caring about ACTA, and we were looking for similarities in ACTA in the first drafts 2 years ago. I think it was leaked by WikiLeaks back then. What are the similarities to other existing legal texts already? And for example, we found out that IP-RED Article 8 is verbatim copied into ACTA in one of the first drafts. And PIPI was a fundamental tool in finding this for us. The other example that exist is, for example, the European Interoperability Framework 2 has been somewhat co-authored also by the BSA, the Business Software Alliance. We haven't used PIPI for that back then, but the Free Software Foundation Europe has been doing a lot of research into that and manually identifying these copy paths. So PIPI Longstrings is basically a tool that helps us identifying existing text blocks that already have been copied from earlier documents. This is very useful, for example, if you have position papers from lobbying groups, or if you have like transcripts from talk like these, and if there's someone quoting some text or proposing some text, and this text turns out later in one of the directives, you can trace back the origin, but I think Peter's going to talk about this a bit more from a scientific perspective. So basically, this is about identifying memes, and it also helps you to understand, for a layman like me, who's not a lawyer, for me it's quite hard to understand these legal texts. But if I see that, for example, IPRED Article 8 has been copied, I know already the meaning of Article 8, because that has been deviated, and so I don't even have to read it. I know this is here, so it makes it for me more understandable and easier to comprehend. And the more of these already interpreted text blocks there are, the less effort it is for me as a layman to understand what this is about. And also you can trace back the origins and you can see where this all comes from. So this is one of the tools that I've developed, and I saw an opportunity that enhances our efficiency. The slide doesn't belong here. The other tool that I developed is PowerTrack. Basically, we realized the URL is up there. Basically, PowerTrack is like a rewrite of the very excellent tool of Eric. He started EU Wiki, I don't know how many years ago.
Three years ago.
Basically, it's a wiki that tries to track the dossiers in the parliament, you know, OEL. And on OEL, you have a lot of metadata about the active dossiers, and also, of course, about the historical dossiers. And I don't agree with the approach that Eric took with his new wiki approach, so I thought maybe I can apply my own, the result is PowerTrack. And we used also insights from other NGOs. There was a workshop last year in Barcelona where a lot of NGOs from all across Europe caring about digital freedoms convened, and we tried to gather all the inputs and all the needs they have. And one of the results of that workshop is PowerTrack, actually, also, as said, inspired by the EU wiki thing. And basically, it aggregates four kinds of data sets, not only OEL. It also aggregates the data from the committee agendas. This is extremely important for us, because if you consider the committee agendas, they are published in PDFs. So if you care about what is going on in one topic for one dossier, you actually need to, if you're from the outside, you need to go to the European Parliament website, download all the PDFs, and check if there's a change in the agenda or not. While what PowerTrack does, it automatically parses the PDFs and publishes it on the internet with HTML, so you don't have to download it anymore. And for us, the most important aspect as an NGO, this comes from the Foundation for Free Information Infrastructure. The input was that one of the most important data that we need is the deadlines for tabling amendments. And this deadline is in the agenda, in the PDF. So if you care about these deadlines, most of the time you have to open this PDF daily and check if there's any change in that. And that is a huge effort. And using PowerTrack, you have this data automatically. If you care about one dossier, you can track it anytime and you have the data when are the appropriate tabling deadlines. Also, the metadata from OERL, if there's any change, you know, like a new responsible or a new committee or a member of parliament has been assigned as a rapporteur or something, you can get email notifications about this. You can also, the RSS, which I prefer to email, you can do some analysis. And if any of the documents are already published on Eurolex, there's automatic linking to Eurolex to the document itself. So you can go from the OER page to the Eurolex page and see the text itself. And the whole thing is not on Eurolex, but it's already embedded in Pippi Longstrings. So you go from PowerTrack to Pippi Longstrings, where you can have inline commenting. So you can actually comment on the text, I will show you this later on, in Eurolex. And then the most exciting for me, of course, is the data mining aspect. Since this data has been liberated from all these very bad formats that are hard to hard to analyze and hard to process, now this data is easy to process. And the complete database is liberated under a free data license, so anyone can download this data and can use this data for its own purposes. This is available as CVS. If you want to use it in an Excel file, or if you have some coder programmer, you can hire a coder and you can code whatever analysis functions you want to have. And basically, what we do with this service is, I think, to some extent, doing the work of the parliament. Because this data should not be published in this format, but actually, and this is the slide I should show you now, in the sense of the open data definition. And it means any kind of data must be easy to reuse, easy to use, and easy to redistribute. And 2 years ago, 2009, Tim Berners-Lee on the TED conference made a call for raw data now. This means that people should have access to not some kind of prepared data, but to the raw data set, so that everyone can interpret the data himself, not consuming some kind of interpreted data already. And basically, what PowerTrack does to some extent is also liberating this data and following the call of Sir Tim Berners-Lee, providing this data. So in the future, we want to also couple Pippi Longstrings and PowerTrack even more so, so that not only we can find text fragments that are somewhat verbatim from one text in the next text, but we want also to include, and Peter will be talking a bit more about this, we want to do this also on a semantic level, which means text mining that is not using the text anymore, but it tracks, extracts the meaning. And it's even possible, to some extent, to connect documents in different languages. So if one document has the same semantic topic as another document in a different language, we have a chance of connecting those documents, which is, I think, very impressive. And this is one of the things that we want to include in this data. And what another topic is, and I think a need that came up lately in discussions with other NGOs and also with Eric, that not only on Pippi, on the text itself in Eurolex, you need some possibility to comment the text, but also the metadata. I think it might make sense to also comment the data coming from OER. Here's the data that I collect in PowerTrack. This is also the data from the European Parliament on all the members of Parliament. This is a quite nice data set, and I've been told that actually having the contact data for all the active MEPs, if you are in any NGO and you want to have this contact list, costs you 8,000 euros a year. So I'm now destroying this business model. yes. And the other, the fourth data set that I liberate is the vote results from the plenary minutes. This is also not published on the internet per se on a granular level, but only as PDFs or documents. They are also quite hard to parse. In this case, all the voting results are available also as CVS and other data sets, so you can do your own analysis of this data using PowerTrack actually. What can you use this, or what kind of data sets or what data analysis you can do? I think it's quite interesting to see, for example, the list of the dossiers that a member of parliament was responsible for in the committees. This list is not available per se online. This has to be data mined. This has to be prepared already. Also, the statistics, which committees give opinions on which topics, you know. There's a lot of exciting data that can be mined and extracted from that. I will give you some examples in a few minutes, like calendar or... there's a lot of examples and there's a lot of data that can be mined. I'm really excited about having only these four databases. There's so much information in that. Just analyzing that is really exciting for me. Yes, the notification thing is, I think also OEL does that, so it's not really unique. The only unique thing is that you get more data than from OEL, for example, the tailoring guidelines. And also, you can compile a list of dossiers that you care about, and you get all these changes at once. And, for example, we have compiled a list with the European Digital Rights Group. Joe McNamee compiled a list of 70 dossiers, and you can track those dossiers. So these are the dossiers that I care also most about. So there's already a quite nice compilation on that. Yes, this I already told you about this. This is basically that you can, from PowerTrack, you can go to PIPED and see the relationship with other documents and dossiers. And this is also something I talked about. This is the free data. And basically, there's also one issue, and I think this is quite innovative in solving this problem, database rights. So generous database rights in the European Union, I think, are a mess and should be abolished. They bring a lot of problems with them, but I was able to circumvent database rights by releasing the programs that get the data, so you can compile the data yourself. And the software is governed under free software license, the AGPL V3. So the complete data set is not even, I don't give you the data set if you don't need it. So you are the one compiling the data yourself. So this whole thing is not covered by database rights whatsoever because you only use the software. And this way I circumvented this whole issue of database rights. But of course you can also download the data as a complete database and then it's governed under the ODBL, that is the Open Database License. Yes, currently. Okay, and this is one of the things that I wanted to cover, and this is one of the, like the troll. Basically, all these tools that I develop are developed using free software, and it turns out that in the European Parliament, you use Internet Explorer 7, and it turns out that some of my tools don't work with Internet Explorer 7, and it's impossible for me to test or develop for Internet Explorer 7. It's a closed system, I can't use it. So I'm really, really sorry, but some of the members working inside are deprived of using some of these tools, and you either use it from the outside, or, I don't know, you install your Firefox browser or something, I don't know. I'm not going to give you some ideas, but... basically, the problem is that developing free software for such closed proprietary tools is, in some cases, if you're not professional and don't have the resources for that, it's prohibited and it's impossible. So I'd like to urge everyone to, if it's possible, to switch to a free software solution. You will get a lot more than just a new operating system. The other thing is that I'd like to urge the European Parliament to is to increase the accuracy and the timeliness of the data released, because I think there's quite some gap between the time the data is published on OEL and the decision is made in the parliament. I think the data quality should be improved. For example, if you have a look at the results of the votes in the sessions, there's a lot of typos. I don't know, the secretaries that are typing up the results make a lot of typos. You know, I'm pretty sure it must be awful to try to write the name of a Bulgarian MEP if you are Swedish and you don't even have the keyboard to find the letter that is in the name. And also, of course, the data itself needs to be much more processable. So I would be really happy if PARTRACK would not be necessary at all, because then I can concentrate on other issues. If I don't have to liberate this data, because the data is already free in the first place. That means not publishing this data in PDFs, but in a raw format, and also making it available as raw database downloads. Then I don't have to do this and don't have to care about this, and this would free up some resources. Of course, I addressed already the vendor lock-in that comes from using, for example, Internet Explorer. Yes. That's about it. And I would like to say thanks and now to Eric for the inspiration, and I'd like to show you some examples.
Get that from.
Exactly. I don't know if how many of you people know about the Data Hub. This is a central location for collecting all kind of data on the internet and publishing this data. And the Data Hub has also, of course, the data from PARTRACK. Here you can download all the deep databases and so on. So a lot of people have access to this already, also from outside. The next example is, I'm going to show you a little bit of PARTRACK. You have a list of all the active dossiers. That means all the dossiers that are not finished yet. This is quite a huge list, actually. I don't know, like 700 dossiers. More interesting is the stats, the statistics. You can see how many are in preparatory, first reading, commission, council, second reading, and so on. And you have quite nice, I don't know how many of you guys use pivot list in Excel for changing and analyzing the data. This is such a pivot list, so you can even like how many consultations are in APCO, maybe what is this, budget committee. But you can also reorder this, like moving. Yes. And then I can take the stage here, reordering that, and it gives me a different view on all the data. How many are, and so you can rearrange it live. And this is a pivot table. If you do data analysis, you will love this. And this is not Excel, this is in the browser. Then you have the data for the committees, like the agenda. As I said, it's not in a PDF anymore, with links to the docs and everything. You see all the dossiers for the committee if you need an overview. And of course, you have a list of the members of the committee, which you can, of course, filter to. Then you have a view which is similar to the view on OEL on one certain document. But of course, you have also cross-links to the committees, for example, to the members of parliament or to the groups even. This is not a nice example, but maybe I can show you. And you have also a list of the activities, like the timeline, what happened with this dossier already. Maybe I'll make this bigger for you. Okay. And you can see also here, you can download the whole data in a raw data set, and you can track this dossier. If you write your email here and you write the name of the group where you want to collect this, then you can simply start tracking that. I'll give you a better example, the telecoms package. You get voting results from the telecoms package. Sorry?
The previous one on Northern Works was a good example as well.
Yeah, but that's not finished yet. This is one where the, where we have already votes.
Okay.
The Northern Works is just in progress. It's just in the first reading, I think, and this is finished already. So here you have a complete view versus on the document that is still in progress. And of course, you have a lot more data here. Like the activities list is much, much bigger. You also have the summaries. I don't know whether this should be closed. So you have the whole history on the telecoms package. And then here you have a result of the data mining already, which I think this data is not available either in OEL or anywhere else in this form. You have from the database, if you look at the dossiers that start with IMM, the immunity dossiers, they have in the title always the surname of the member of parliament that is subject to the immunity waiver procedure. So I, and this is only in one certain position, so I can take that name and look up the name in the database of members of parliament. So I link the data from the dossier to the member of parliament, and since I have the member of parliament, I know which party he belongs to, which group he belongs to, and which country he belongs to. And you can see the top list of the countries here that lead the immunity waiver procedure. And if you click, you can see also the distribution between the parties. And if you go to Forza Italia, this is not correctly rendered, actually. Maybe I'll make it smaller. I don't know how to make it smaller. Anyway, so here you can see the members of parliament. How many times? Like 3 times, Mr. De Luneta. I think he's the top on this list. And then this is maybe for the geeks more, the database schema, what kind of data we have on in the database. Last slide. Okay. And this is also, I think, a quite interesting listing. This is not existing also either on OEL nor anywhere else. This is basically a list of the subjects on OEL, like, and then you see which party and which group and which country cares about which subject most. And you can see, for example, Il Popolo della Libertà, is caring massively by far about industrial restructuring. And if you, for example, want to see the German Conservative Party, guess what they care most about? The automobile industry. And there's a lot of similar interesting data that you can see from this data set, like which country, which party cares about which topics. And I think this is some data that needs more analyzing and more examination. I would love to show you also Pippi Longstrings, but I fear that I'm offline and I haven't preloaded the tab. I'm sorry for not showing you that. But this basically concludes, I think, my demo and presentation, yes, from PowerTrack and Pippi Longstrings, two tools that have been developed to offset the asymmetry that we suffer from. Thank you.
Right. Can I make some comments, questions, or yes. Yeah. Okay. First of all, I'd say that this is the first time I see this. This looks very, very useful because even if you're on the inside of the parliament, keeping track of the dossiers, keeping track of the deadlines, keeping track of all the agenda changes, it's really, really hard work. I mean, and we get these agenda changes very often, very, very late.
Accuracy and timeliness of this data.
Yeah.
Is important, the accuracy and the timeliness, of course.
And I would suspect that in many cases it's probably not the European Parliament computer department that's responsible for the untimeliness, but rather the quite messy way things are being handled in this house, generally. Which is awful. Okay. Anyway, that's one comment. Second comment, you mentioned the plenary votes. That's an excellent site, votewatch.eu.
Yeah. I know votewatch.eu, but the data there is not free. It's an academic project, and you can't reuse the data. It's already interpreted. This is what I refer to. If you go, for example, to Wikipedia and look up the term parliamentary informatics, you will see a list of about, I don't know, 200 different sites that do similar things also on the national level. And they all reinterpret the data already. And they don't give you a chance for doing your own interpretation. That you can download the data and stuff like that. Of course, if VoteWatch is enough for you, use it. But for me, I'm the data analyst, you know, I need the data in my own format. I can't use it in a already prepared way.
I don't know, perhaps you can contact the VoteWatch, because, I mean, they are an open, well, they're an NGO initiative with the word open in a couple of places in the title, so perhaps it is possible. They're quite good, because they're very, very fast. Well, there's been a plenary vote in the same day. They have the data up.
That's true for Patrick as well, I think.
Yeah.
We usually get the data. The data is usually published at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon on weekdays, and I have the data at 3:23.
That's excellent. That's very good. Yeah. Two more comments. When it comes to dossiers, one of the very interesting things, if it is possible to find that information, would be to find the shadows, the shadow rapporteurs for all the dossiers. It works like this: you got the formal rapporteur appointed by the European Parliament, who is responsible for making sure that the dossier moves forward and everything. And then every political group appoints a shadow rapporteur. Somebody in that committee who will follow that particular dossier. That's often difficult to find because I would expect that some are unstructured in all these PDFs.
I don't know. Do you know any PDFs where this data is published? Because if there is, I will, you know?
I sometimes get mails or see things.
I think this is insider knowledge and I need insiders to supply this information to me, or we need to increase the accuracy of the data coming out of the parliament.
Yeah. I don't know if and how the data is available, but that would be very useful.
Okay, just you are discussing reverse engineering, maybe you are interested in knowing the engineer who prepared everything. We started in 87 with a workflow project. The name was APTECOM, Assemblée Parlementaire Committee. The idea of the Parliament was to manage in real time four kinds of information. The first is managing the actors, members, rapporteurs, committees, plenary, council, commission. Managing the documents, the Parliament, preparatory works, common position of the council, and so on. Managing the events, real events, foreseen events, deadline for amendments, real vote. And the main issue was to link everything to dossier procedures. Because this is not done in the council, is not done in the commission. They just mirror some of our information. This idea of workflow has been rebuilt in 96 with a project, the name is ITER. ITER is a sort of a bus where all the services working and linked to the European Parliament works, committees, conference of presidents, plenary, feed the data in the same moment they are preparing the document. The main starting point was exactly the one that you are starting from, the draft agenda. Because in draft agenda you have the actors, you have the events, you have the documents, and you have in fact the procedures. So what you are doing is, in the reverse way, what is currently done in each parliamentary committee. We have not in the draft agenda the shadow rapporteur. Why? Because the rules say the committee appointed rapporteurs. But the ITER system, our workflow system, has a space for shadow rapporteurs. If the secretariat of a committee insert the name, then you can sort it out. This is something which is foreseen in a new project, which has been recently launched. The name is E-Committee, which in fact will be accessible to the members, the political groups, where all this daily data will be accessible in a sensible way. Obviously, you can retrieve only what you are inserting. For instance, the committee I am currently following, LIBE committee, has started to insert the shadow rapporteur name. So I am able to list this and cross with the different dossier. But let's come back to your project, which I really appreciate. And as a future EU citizens from 1st of December, I hope we'll even reuse it in a sort of EU Wikilex project, which could in fact make possible to fit together the workflow of the Parliament with the workflow of the Council. Because you know, 70% of all the co-decisions now are dealt in the first reading of the Parliament. But behind, you have the Council. So you don't understand what is really happening if you don't monitor what the Council is doing at the same time.
That is also my goal, that I want to extend.
But this is perfectly feasible. The point is to make the reverse engineering of it. To be frank, this was a project to collect all this public data in a common framework, was launched in 2004 with a pilot project. The name was TransJAI, Transparency in Justice and Home Affairs. Nothing sorted out. The project is currently under the work of the Office of Publication, which has started to meet the same problems that you are meeting. But this, just to tell you that in fact also the institution have the same need to collect all this information and make them available and usable. But your project, I think, is extremely helpful and interesting because already make possible to connecting some dots and then maybe check the quality of this information according to the use that you want to do. My comment as an official of this institution is that we have gone too far in splitting things. For a rapporteur or a member who is a member of many committees, could be difficult to manage the same agenda with all this different information because of the separation that has been created. But this can be solved. So, good luck and hope to follow.
We are already using it and I'm happy about it.
Yeah.
I think there was a question over there as well. Oh, please.
Question. So you talk about that you're extracting data from PDFs, etc., and you're saying that the data already exists. Could the European Parliament make the data available in raw format?
Yes.
May I just tell you that we are now revising the general law on access to documents. And document is any kind of information, whatever the domain. So even metadata are information. So, in theory, these are all information that anyone can ask for.
Can I ask Can I make a comment on PDFs? I think PDFs are the tool of the devil in the printing industry.
Now we are, you will vote maybe in 1 month's time on the revision of the access to documents regulation. Mr. Cashman is the rapporteur. In one of the amendments, there is a clear obligation by the institution to make available data and metadata on a public legislative work, just to make possible to check the accuracy of this data. I hope that the Parliament will support it, but moreover, I hope that the Council will accept it. It's far too big.
There was a question on that.
Yes, a simple question. When you check a dossier using your software, can you also, you also have the information of how many pages there are, document size, pages? Because actually I'm working with translation digit here at the European Parliament. So in some way I don't care about what they say, I care.
The problem is, as long as they are not closed, the dossiers, they are not really published on Eurolex.
So there's not even a temporary value, it's 54 pages.
I don't have the data now of the drafts and the amendments, and you know, all the amendments changed the whole thing so many times until there's a final vote on it. I don't know how to get to this data before the final vote and it gets accepted.
Because for us this is a major issue. It will be interesting for making workload forecasts.
Maybe that's possible. I think you can, if you, how do you know how big a document will be before the vote is, all the amendments are done and finalized, you know? The document can change a lot, but I don't know.
Just to make a remark, I'm working for the ITER application where Emilio was referring to, it's true, it's quite some data that's inserted into ITER, gets only there when it's introduced. So it can only go to other applications like OI once it's there. So that's one remark I want to make. Second is that OI is fed for almost 90% by our application. So therefore, you are referring to, in fact, you refer to ITER, so I think it's a good idea.
I like
we speak to each other.
I think OER is the best of the European Parliament publishing interfaces. It even publishes things in XML, so it almost satisfies my need for raw data. So OER is great.
Yeah. And one remark about your PDF. Lately, the Parliament realized that PDF is not the best form because the committee agendas since a few months are published fully in HTML as well. So let's get in touch after this interesting meeting because there is some information to share for me.
Nice.
If you are going to talk to each other after this meeting, that's one very practical problem I realized I have today. The Parliament has an excellent system for entering amendments called AP4AM. It's very, very, very convenient to use. And then you get out of that Word document. Probably you can't open that Word document in OpenOffice.
No, you can.
No, you can't.
Okay.
No, you can't. So for some reason, the AP4AM creates a format that OpenOffice is unable, which may is really, really a problem. Since I'm using Linux on my own, so if you can sort that out between yourselves, well, that would be very, very helpful.
Can I comment on? I don't think that's between. That's not in your department, 84AM.
No, but
no.
Colleagues of 84AM are sitting next door, so I noted down the point and.
Actually,
they're really very well aware of this problem, and it's just up to them to sort of for the next police.
But
I don't know if you mentioned it to them.
I can just say that today, this afternoon, we will have a meeting, Jonathan and I and Karsten Gerloff from FSFE will meet with Rainer Wieland his office, and someone from DG iTech, I think. And we will talk exactly about 84AM and the compatibility of that application in other browsers. So we would like to set up a meeting between the developers of 84AM and the developers of Firefox, because we know that it actually works quite good in Firefox, and we would like to kind of encourage that that dialogue, so that everybody knows that you can make things work in the Parliament with free software browsers, for example, and maybe then we can sort this export problem, which I don't think is related to 84AM, but it could be an, another interface that's connected to the Explorer dependency, that the application runs in Explorer and then Explorer cannot... I don't know exactly where the problem lies. But yeah, there was a... Can I just make... I had one short question. When the first half year when I started with the Europarl, no, with the EUWiki project and the Tratten project to retrieve data, we got blocked from the Parliament for different reasons, and I maybe made too many access requests per minute or something. So even if we slow down the number of requests, sometimes we were blocked, and I had to talk to some department that led me to the second department. So it was a very long chain to kind of ask them to please unblock this this request from us. Did you encounter any? So that has changed now. This full pipe access.
I've never been blocked. I'm happy to say that.
So.
But I'm also quite light on. Okay. Not really aggressive on downloading all this data.
Okay. Sorry. Please, your question.
Oh yeah. Okay. So, first of all, I'm working for a member of the parliament, and I have a personal interest in the things. I worked several years as a Unix system administrator, so I can feel your problems, I feel your pain, like I say. The problem with PDF and other things is that when you pass this data, you have real problems. You have no structure. You have a problem to handle this data in a specific way. But this should have been solved with the Open Data Initiative from the European Commission, because open data requires not only the publication of public data, but a structured format to use it and a proper license to use it. So I think that the data of the European Parliament should fall under this directive and should be made publicly accessible with a proper structure, with good license to use, things like this. And what I would like to know is, are there any examples from other parliaments? Are there any best practices examples? Do other parliaments publish their data in a structured format, yes, an XML format, for example? Yes. And just one short note for the VoteWatch. VoteWatch is the result of an academic project going on for about 5 or 6 years from Professor Simon Hicks. And the data he has is freely available. You can download every vote result on from 1978 onto this date and can use it freely, as far as I realize. I mean, it's free to use on his website to download. You just have to cite the source, of course, and have to say where you get it from. But you can use the data back from 1978 to 2011. And my question now would be if you have some good examples from other parliaments.
Yes. I don't recall the name, because the British have an excellent XML standard done by Jenny Tennyson. She was doing this in XML. And they have an excellent format for publishing the text, the legal text. It's very granular, and you get a lot of metadata out of that XML, and the British, the UK Parliament publishes the data in that format. But I don't really know the name, but I can look it up later on afterwards.
No problem.
And the US government, the Senate, and House all have publications in XML, so it's all extracted format.
But if you go to the parliamentary informatics Wikipedia entry, I think that is very comprehensive and lists a lot of national initiatives, and some of them use similar, and some are even, I think two of the best European examples are surprisingly the Bulgarians and the Polish. Polish has Simometer, which is a great tool, and the Bulgarians, I don't know the name of that site, but that site is also very well done, surprisingly.
If I can just remind two things. On a legal point of view, the European Union adopted in 1993 a directive pushing the member states to make available public data. I don't remember the number of the directive, it's 1993. But it's very easy to understand it because it is in the rares of the regulation 1049. Because we say that if we ask something to the from the member states, we should be able to do the same for our own work. Now, the question is how to have this kind of public data and metadata from the European Parliament is also a very easy answer to this. You have the Bureau. The Bureau is the responsible of the management of the European Parliament. The Bureau is accountable to the members of the Parliament. So the Bureau should just decide that this kind of data could be, from tomorrow, be available to members. And this data should be public. Prepare a petition of the members, and now, then, ask for the reaction. Because this is an internal organizational issue of the European Parliament. There is no confidential information if you ask public data, like date, meetings, metadata, and so on. You have some hundreds of members requiring for it, and then check what will be the reaction.
Going back to the license for a second, I think OIL releases the data with reproduction of textual and multimedia items which are property of the European Union identified by the words blah 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 or of third parties and for which the European Union has the rights of use is authorized for non-commercial purposes only provided that the entire item is reproduced and the source is acknowledged.
Absolutely.
And yes, so basically for me this license fits, even though it's not a established license. So I think like well-known licenses like the CC0 or CC attribution license or something like that would make even more sense because more people understand that and can automatically realize how to use it. I don't know, I don't really like the non-commercial exclusion actually because that makes it not free anymore.
As a final comment, Europeana, the European Library project has just decided to have all metadata under a CC0 license. And that's a huge step forward that they come to the conclusion that to make this work, we must waive all database rights, we must make it really open. But I think we must move on to the next presentation. Christian, can you?
Well, no, I don't really have anything to add exactly. Please.
Okay. Thank you. All right, so my name is Peter Imstrand. I'm a researcher at the Interactive Institute in Sweden. So I'm going to give a talk which I call Reverse Engineering Lawmaking Process. So I will talk a bit more in abstract terms and more general terms, trying to be somewhat provocative and somewhat give broader ideas and broader implications. All right, so I guess some of you are familiar with reverse engineering, perhaps not everybody. So reverse engineering is basically engineering backwards. So rather than designing something and making the plans for processing and manufacturing, you take a manufactured item and then you try to understand how is it be constructed? How was it made? How do the different parts work together? So even though not so much publicly debated, this is a standard practice in many industries. So say phone manufacturers or car manufacturers, they buy stuff from their competitors and they take them apart and try to understand the new features that they built and how do they work and so on. Even though they are restricted by patents to copy it, they still want to understand it. So this is standard practice. Also, there's a standard practice within the software industry, where it's notable for applications in hacking and cracking software. So, for instance, removing copy protections or removing restrictions of various kinds, which then require to look into the machine code and understand how it actually works and to how to change it for your purposes. Also, it's about finding exploits, which are bugs or things in software that you could, for instance, write a virus or something like that to exploit some error in the software. However, this way of thinking and approaching things is much broader than this. So basically, the same cognitive way of approaching something is what archaeologists and historians do. When they find some ancient artifact, then you try to understand who made this, how do the different parts work, like how was the pyramids built in Egypt, or things like that. So it's basically the same mindset. So this is actually much broader than just reverse engineering as such. And then we can see that there have been some attempts to ban this kind of notion, like the DMCA in the United States, that says that it's illegal to actually try to decompose software for these kind of purposes. It's also I heard an anecdote that, I mean, this is common in all industries, also the food industry. So for instance, in the sausage industry in the UK, that was a concrete anecdote I heard, where they do this. So when there is some kind of innovation in some new sausage that is introduced to the market, then the other companies try to reverse engineer that sausage to figure out what new spices were added or things like that. And then actually they're quite open about it. So another reason for picking it up is this more or less well-known quote, about the metaphor of the lawmaking process as similar to the sausage factory. Where the more you know about the process, about how sausages are being made or how laws are being made, the less confidence you have in the final product. This has been attributed to Bismarck, but it looks like it's actually older than that. So this can just illustrate that process, how sausages are being made. Alright, so if we move beyond, I guess some of you are familiar with this guy, Larry Lessig. He's a professor at Stanford University in the United States in law, and a well-known proponent for it.
Yeah, it's Harvard, yeah, right.
Has been pushing things like Creative Commons and so on. And a number of years ago, he proposed this idea of that he suggested that code is law or can be viewed as law. And with that, he meant that when you try to regulate or affect some societal thing, then you can do that by regulation, so by laws, then you try to change the behavior of people in some way. But similarly, you can also do that by building software and software infrastructures and protocols and things like that. So for instance, by changing how the internet works, then you can affect human behavior in some way. So this was his idea, that you can actually, you should have a broader view of how you want to affect human behavior at the group level, or at societal level, not only by laws, but you can do it through other kinds of forces, and one such force is through software protocols and things that we actually have a lot of control over, so we can design them in various ways, and that will have consequences.